Welcome to the Faith Element Podcast, focusing on James chapter 1, verses 17 through 27 for the August 30th, 2015 session, Worthy Religion. I'm David Cassidy, and I'm joined today by Daniel Glaze, Bert Montgomery, and Aaron Hall is back with us. Hey, Aaron, how are you?
Hey, David. Great. Good to be here.
I understand you've been having some thunderstorms today.
Yes, it's been pretty loud around here.
So if we hear thunder or you dashing underneath the desk, we'll know what's happening.
Right, it's not Sharknado. That's good.
Today we're looking at the first chapter of James. Bert, can you give us a beginning look at it?
Sure. It's quite a jump because the last several weeks we've been in the Old Testament and in the book of Kings, and we're jumping way over into the New Testament past the Gospels and past Paul's letters into the letter of James. And pretty much is generally believed to have been written by James, the brother of Jesus. Some dispute that, but that's not really here or there for us. Probably the first thing that most of us think about when we think of James is the emphasis on faith versus works. And when I was in seminary, I did a presentation on the book of James, basically as a letter, as it was written as a letter, reading it straight through to a congregation and presenting it orally like that, and then also hearing it orally straight through as a letter being read to you, you really, really, really get the feeling that James is concerned with action. James is concerned with doing. James is concerned with being. You know, we're not arguing doctrinal purity or theological ideas here. For James, the Christian faith is physical. It's social. I think we could say that for James, it is incarnational. And in today's text, James stresses the discipline of listening more than talking. James stresses the necessity of being slow to anger. And James tells us exactly, for him, what he thinks pure or good religion is. I'd like to share a few verses, if I can, from Clarence Jordan's Cotton Patch translation, which, if you're not familiar, Clarence Jordan was a biblical Greek scholar, PhD scholar, who returned back to his farming roots in rural Georgia, started Koinonia Farms, which out of which Habitat for Humanity came, but he translated scripture directly from the Greek into the southern white dialect of the mid-1900s during the Civil Rights Movement. So this is his translation, a few verses from chapter 1, beginning in verse 19 here. Listen here, my dear brothers. Let every man of you be quick with his ears, slow with his tongue, hard to get riled up, because a man's temper contributes nothing to God's cause. Then move on, and he says, Become doers of the word. Most of us know the King James, be ye doers. Don't kid yourselves by being listeners only. And then in verse 26, if a fellow thinks he has religion, but can't keep from running off at the mouth, and if he has a dishonest heart, that man's religion is as dead as a doornail. The religion which God the Father considers pure and clean is to look after helpless orphans and widows and to keep oneself free from the taint of materialism. That's pretty challenging stuff. And, you know, Nikki Hardiman, her introduction video this week, talks a lot about this, be slow to anger, quick to listen, and reminds us of, you know, when people think of Christians, especially right now, what we think of are loudmouths and a lot of angry people running around how they're angry about something going on in the world, and they're going to be angry for God, and they're going to fix it for God. And it kind of gets tough, and Nikki points out that what James is reminding us in this text is that God's justice in this world is not accomplished by human anger. And I find that very interesting. And so we're going to talk about that this podcast, about doing and being, but also the role of anger. Because, you know, we all think we have a right to be you know, righteous indignation, right? And as people have said, if you're not angry, you're not paying attention. And we live in a world that the media worships angry people, angry rant. I mean, that's what we turn on Fox News or MSNBC or CNN, to watch people angrily yell at each other. And one of my favorite comedians is Lewis Black, who makes a living being angry and ranting. So what does that do for us? Where does that leave the church?
Well, Bert, one thing I find really interesting in that passage, James doesn't say don't be angry. He just says be slow to be angry, and slow to anger. And so as I'm thinking through that and wondering exactly what that means, there are definitely times when we can be angry, righteously so, about oppression, injustice, poverty, whatever the case may be. But I think the key is that we do not act out of that anger. That anger can be motivation or impetus, but then we act out of gentleness and love. It also causes me to think about, he also says, be quick to listen.
Mm-hmm.
And I thought, how much better we'd be if we spent more time listening than speaking. And I thought, I've often been wrong when I've opened my mouth, but I've never been wrong when I've just sat there and listened.
That's so true. For me.
So, take that for what it's worth.
I love that phrase standing out to me, what you said, Bert, about running off at the mouth. It just seems like there's not a whole lot of thought put into that. But when I think about being slow to anger, there's a different intentionality with this too. I think of, I have a 3-year-old, and teaching him to pay attention to his feelings. And he gets angry. He is not slow to anger. He is very fast to anger. And his feelings come out in, bursts and loudness and that kind of thing. So teaching him, use your words. What are you trying to say? Or let's think a minute. Are you mad about that? There's a whole lot of talking going on in our little 3-year-old conversation. But I think the idea of being slow at something is being mindful, paying attention to everything that's going on before you act.
Well, and I think this was written well before the internet, but who among us haven't written an angry email and fired it off? And you do that once or twice, you learn, it's okay to write an angry note and then let it sit, go get a cup of coffee, do something, come back. Usually I just delete it. In fact, if I'm going to write something angry, I just write it in a separate document. And then if I feel like later that it's worth sending or I want to edit it, okay, fine. But it's that time. It's taking time to allow yourself to process and maybe not let the anger control so deeply. But I know I've done that and learned a lesson.
Yeah. Well, David, you and I love and appreciate technology. Maybe Bert and Aaron, you guys do too. But there was a not to get too technical about it, but there's a there was a an update to Gmail, the Google Mail platform, a little while ago that it included the undo button. What is it, for David, for 10 or 15, 30 seconds?
That long.
There's
if
an undo long, at the top.
Yeah.
and all these folks were talking about, like it's best thing since sliced bread, and I thought, come on, man, this took somebody 10 minutes to code, and, but you know what? It saved my hind pots once or twice, sometimes we need to get that out in safe space or in, type it out and then hit the delete before hitting the send. And I think that goes back to what I was saying. It's okay to get angry, but let us not respond, at least to another person, out of that anger. Once we've cooled off a little bit, let's find more constructive ways to respond.
Yeah, that's interesting. And it's interesting that you missed, I'm just going to throw this out, that you mentioned the internet, the age of the internet, because it seems to feed individual's anger, and it gives an outlet for everybody to vent. And you know, comment sections on newspaper articles, blog posts.
Never read anything. The comments.
Yeah.
Amen.
So, but I mean, but that's where it goes. It gives everybody an outlet to let their ugliest, angriest rants come out. And, you know, maybe that's not healthy.
Well, and part of it, I think, is obviously there's an impersonal nature to some of the internet where, you know, if you respond to someone's tweet or on Facebook, you reply, they may not know you, right? I mean, so
exactly.
There's not much relational risk there. It's not like you're going to show up and be embarrassed later because they don't know you. I've often likened it to road rage. I mean, I think we're far more likely to get angry behind the wheel of our car. Somehow being inside this metal and glass box isolates us from other people. Mm-hmm. I just wonder, did they have horse rage, you know, back in the Old West? You know, oh, he pulled out in front of me. Oh, you know. But, I mean, seriously, probably they didn't, right? Because you could see human beings. You could see us face to face. And I think, you know, we don't do that walking down the street so much, right, that somebody might bump into you or something, you get irritated, but it's not like you're going to go off on them the way you would in a car. And I think it's that the internet does that. It gives us distance, makes it impersonal, kind of like our vehicles do. And so it's easier to forget that there are people that we're, you know, being angry at and venting upon.
Have you guys seen the movie Chef? Okay.
No, but I've been told
everybody needs to see this movie. Every pastor needs to see this movie. It's great, great, great movie. And it's about a guy who is a chef, and it's all about him finding his passions and that kind of stuff. But he has no idea the impact of the internet, what you're saying there. And so his son teaches him to tweet, and he has no idea what the impact of this is. And so an angry tweet, the rest of the movie is about him kind of fixing what he broke with an angry tweet when he doesn't realize that kind of quick response is something that people react to. And so the whole rest of the movie is him, you know, building his relationship through actions, which is kind of what we're talking about in the text. But great, great movie. And the actions he has to do are not quick things. It's very... a long, intentional time. He has to change his whole life, and he has to repair relationships. And none of that happens in a 20-second tweet, like the angry thing kind of did. So absolutely stop what you're doing and go watch that movie tonight.
Okay.
Well, but you bring up a good point, Aaron, that you know, that it takes time to work through anger, come down off the ledge, as Jesus says, go speak to your brother or sister with whom you have the disagreement. Man, it's so much easier just to hide behind the anonymous comment and just spout off. I mean, the much more difficult but ultimately much more transformative work is dealing directly with our brothers and sisters. I've often, you know, you mentioned a minute ago, never read the comment section.
Yeah.
I have often thought, and David, maybe you're aware, there may be some online forums that do this, but what would they look like if somehow you were required to put your actual name and a picture and a recent picture? How would comments be different, and how would we
and
talk
what
to
you
one
do
another?
For a living?
maybe so, but I can be overly optimistic about things. I certainly have rose-colored glasses, but I have to believe we would treat folks differently if we did that.
I'm more cynical. I'm not sure it would change things. and you know, it's just funny. This goes on when you keep reading James, and we'll probably talk about this next week. You know, James gets more specific about the power of the tongue to kill, I mean, to attack, to destroy, to set a wildfire. This little tiny organ in our mouth has that power. And when you know, today's text, it's the anger that we use and we lash out and attack one another.
But then in this passage, when he talks about be doers of the word, this idea of the mirror and realizing who you are. That stuff happens through the actions.
Well, have you guys ever had those? I mean, we've all had that one that you can share, an experience where you've been talking to somebody or on the phone or what have you, when you said something and it was almost like that a foreign entity was saying these words. You couldn't believe this. But sure enough, you said them.
You know, for me, I'm just going to tell us use an illustration from a TV show. If you remember the TV show Scrubs from a few years ago.
Yeah.
Very, very interesting how that you always were inside the lead character's head. And so right before he spoke, or right before he, JD was the lead character, right before he did anything or spoke anything, you would hear the thought processes, don't do this, I should say this. And then, but you knew how he was feeling and all this, and you knew what he was going to do, he knew what he was going to do. So you hear all the stop, take a breath, don't say this, say this instead, but the build up and everything, and then he just says it, and immediately he's regretting it. And I think, you know, that to me, I related so much to that. I mean, I think we've all had this and again, it comes back to anger. When you're so riled up and you've got these passions going and you're sickened and you're tired and you're going to let them have it. And you get that moment of back off, give it a second, don't say this, you know, say something else. And but you give into the passion of the moment and then you destroy something. You destroy a part of a relationship. That takes a long time to heal, or you attack someone's character that didn't deserve it and it was unfair. You know, I think we've all done that to some degree or another.
I know that most of the time, if I do say something and I shouldn't, I always confess to my sister. I will call her or text her and say, "Oh my gosh, I cannot believe what I just said," or she'll call me and do the same. And she has a firm rule that if you're hanging out with someone where you just, you know, you're going to say something, or it's someone who just kind of rubs you the wrong way, shut up and eat the rolls. If you're at dinner, there's always bread. Just keep shoving rolls in your mouth and the conversation will move on, and maybe it's extra calories, but you just shut up and eat the rolls until the conversation moves on.
That's good.
So, Aaron, if we're having dinner together and you're going to town on a roll, I just need to apologize
just for something I've said. Just know that I am in slight anger at whatever you just said. Sometimes it's just really good bread, but also you might be curbing your anger. I'm just a doer of the word. I'm not an angry person.
That's great.
That's a book title.
Right? Exactly. Shut up and eat the rolls.
You know, Bert, if we can go back to something you said in your introduction, I think you were referencing Nikki Hardman's video background on this passage, but both of y'all are bringing up the fact that, you know, those leaders of the faith or those Christians who seem to get the most press these days are the ones who are shouting the loudest.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, that was sort of convicting to me because, you know, I'm probably one of those noisy Christians because of, you know, I make a living with my voice on Sunday mornings. It's how I put food on the table is trying to bring a word, to the gathered people. While I do have great respect for what I'm called to do, and I do believe that even in 21st century modern life, there's still a place for the proclaimed word.
Mm-hmm.
But if I'm honest, it's not the talkers who get things done.
Yeah.
You know, it's those who quietly go about their business. You know, we're getting into a serious topic, but I've got a funny story to tell. I'll never forget. I had this experience. My father and me, two preachers, my younger brother and my father-in-law, two engineers, are trying to put together the crib for my firstborn.
Bless your heart.
For Ella. And my father and I, two preachers, are reading the directions. And it's like step two, and we're saying, no, you need this piece. No, you need this piece. Would you be quiet and read? And then we turn around. So it's, oh, yeah, okay, I think you're right. We turn around and we say, okay, step two. And James, my younger brother, goes, We're on step 6. These two engineers who are not, you know, who are not taught to communicate well with one another are the ones getting the work done.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, where the two talkers, professional talkers, are bickering over what we should be doing. So, man, James would be having something to say to me.
Daniel, in my house, he probably has a lot of least favorite phrases, but one of them is that talkers should not interrupt doers, because while he's having some existential angst about whatever it is that needs to be done, I have already done the thing. And so, you know, that's said in love and all that kind of stuff, but a lot of times the doers get things done while the talker, and I definitely don't think you are one of the loud Christians, because I think there's probably some lived faith going on in your life. But I think of the loud Christians as the people who have a lot to say, but they hurt with their words. And they're loud because they get the microphone a lot of times. What do you guys think about that?
Well, and they do. And they do so believing, some probably very sincerely believing, some I'm not so sure, that they're standing up for God. They're afraid that the world is changing away from God, you know, and they're going to be faithful. And so there's this anger, there's this loudness, and the more I scream, the more I yell. At the same time, you know, there's always the story of the prophet. You think of the prophet who's standing alone yelling at everybody, you know, but they say, why are you doing this? You're not going to change anybody's mind. He says, I can't change anybody else. I'm just trying not to change, to become like everybody else, you know? And so we've got this mix of, sometimes it's good to rail and no, but then other times, and I think more often than not, what we're seeing now is just a bunch of angry, you know, there's Brian Kaler, who writes for Ethics Daily, isn't that right? Ethics Daily. He wrote a book a few years ago with a great title, just addressing all these, we won't name them, but a lot of very popular people with television and radio shows. And his title of his book was, For God's Sake, Shut Up. You know, they're just ranting.
And eat your rolls.
Right, yeah, exactly.
Eat your rolls. They're ranting and they're angry and they're not doing anything for the kingdom of God. That we believe the scriptures teach us is, you know, loving, merciful, justice, helping the poor, taking care of the vulnerable. They're just angry and threatened and letting go. But I love the title of that, and I thought of that when I was reading this passage from James. For God's sake, shut up! And I wonder, you know, that may be a new translation coming out that we could use.
Well, Aaron, you mentioned a few minutes ago, you know, that it isn't just folks spouting off or being angry like it's just some futile exercise. I mean, it is in a sense, but there are also real consequences to that speech. You mentioned those words hurt. You know, I don't know who came up with the little nursery rhyme, you know, sticks and stones may break my bones, but words will never hurt me. But, you know, because I think it should be words will break your heart.
Yeah.
Words too hurt.
Because, I mean, they do, and those words are incredibly powerful. So it's not just spouting off at the mouth with no consequences. I mean, there are very real consequences.
Oh, yeah.
Human consequences to the way we speak to one another. It is important.
Here in a college town, and I teach at Mississippi State University, and colleges all across the country are beginning to become very aware of this as it relates to LGBT issues and gay neighbors and friends. And when you talk with people who have been hurt by the church, by the language of the church, and that's a lot of the angry preaching that we hear right now, but there are individuals who have been so beaten and so impacted by God. Not only can God not love you, but God actually hates you, and you're not worthy. I mean, this that leads to suicide, attempted suicide, just by hearing preachers and people say things. So words can be very deadly. in that sense. And I'm very sympathetic to that because, again, being on a college campus, we're taught to listen for warning signs and for people who are struggling with those things.
And at the same time, how powerful is it to say to those same people who have been hurt and just say, I want to listen to you. Can you tell me about your experience? That, I think, opens doors that talking probably couldn't do.
Yeah, and I don't know about you guys. I mean, I totally agree with you, Aaron. My ears don't work when my mouth is going.
Right.
Maybe some people have this ability to listen as they are speaking, but I can't.
What?
exactly. David, I'm speaking.
Sorry.
Your point, Bert, about being trained to listen. You don't find students in trouble by going on, hey, who needs me? Who needs me? Anybody? What's going on in your life?
Yeah.
And then being quiet. And I think that's what James is getting here. Let's listen to God's leading in our life. Let's listen to the experiences of our brothers and sisters. Let's listen to the world around us. And rather than opening our mouth, let's maybe open our hands or start our feet and do some work for God's kingdom here.
Yeah, and that's how he closes our text today, is what pure religion is caring for the widows and orphans, the vulnerable, the ones who are left out, and don't be tainted by the world, or as Clarence Jordan put it, don't be tainted or drawn into materialism. And I think that's, you know, the world is telling us, everybody has a mouthpiece through the internet, through comment posts, through Facebook, everybody has an opportunity to speak. And if you speak loud enough and funny enough, we'll give you a 4-hour radio show every day just to spout off whatever you want. And this is what we strive to do. And what James is reminding us, listen, don't be tainted by the world.
And also that your actions, listen, though, have a voice of their own.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Listening is an action,
it
isn't
is.
It? Versus just talking and walking away. Being with someone is an action. It's doing something.
That's a great point. Maybe listening is the first action step.
Mm. I can't help but read this passage from James and wonder if James would, if he was witnessing the experience of church today, because at least in America, we have a very polarized society,
mm-hmm.
And it's hard to talk sometimes at church, right? Because who are you going to upset? Mm-hmm. It's pretty easy to upset someone, no matter what you say or don't say. And I sometimes wonder if maybe James would call us to talk less at church. I mean, to do stuff together. I mean, maybe the way to unify the body of Christ and to help congregations that are dealing with division and dissension and arguments about issues. I mean, you throw an issue out, we're going to argue about it, right? And then feelings get hurt and people leave and then we're not doing things. If we're packing bags of lunch for people, if we're preparing clothes for the winter for those who don't have them, if we're building a home or fixing up a place for somebody who can't, I mean, those things seem to fall away and we discover how much we have in common and end up leaving a lot of that stuff for God to work out anyway.
Yeah. And this has come up in the previous week's session and in many sessions before, the power of story and the power of social or shared experience always seems to trump doctrinal teachings and theological discussions and who's right or who's wrong. In the long term, you remember the experience and the bonding of doing things, being together more than you do proving your point or arguing about stuff.
Go ahead, Aaron.
I got to be a part of this past spring something called Listen to Your Mother. Speaking of listening, it's a collection of bloggers and writers and just people with a story to tell. And it's called, it's a show where people get up and tell about a 5-minute story. But what's interesting to me is our group, I was one of 12 women, we ended up having a friendship across racial lines and generational lines and all that kind of stuff. People I would have never connected with, but because I heard their 5-minute story of being a mom to a son with autism or what it's like to have, you know, a child who is transgender, or what it's like to lose a child in miscarriage. After hearing these stories, we have all kind of been cheering each other on and taking action with one another. We've had several people who are involved in raising money for their, you know, whatever their thing is. We're involved in each other's stories because we had this show where we listened to each other. And I find it very compelling to think of, what if we gave other people the microphone? Let's listen to your 5-minute story or whatever it is. You just become connected. And I think action, like David was saying, it just kind of comes naturally out of that. Like, you want to act in that person's life.
I think James would tell us we've talked enough. It's time to get back to work.
Well, thanks for another great conversation. But as Daniel was saying earlier, we probably have talked enough. I hope our listeners find some inspiration here. Perhaps we can all be a little slower to anger and to talk. And to eat those rolls, Aaron.
Absolutely.
Thanks, guys.
You guys have a wonderful day.
Thank you
Thanks
very much.
Thanks a lot. Bye. Take care.
Bye.
Find more information about this podcast, as well as videos and teaching resources for this session, at faithelement.net. Subscribe to the Faith Element podcast on iTunes. Faith Element is a service of Faith Lab.